Hello and welcome to episode 183 of Speak Beastie for August 6, 2023. I'm Amy.
I'm Marjolaine.
And I'm Liz from social media.
Yay. Welcome back, Liz.
Yay. So fun. Such a good episode, too, I feel like, to be on.
Yeah, the first episode in a while where we don't have a screenplay to talk about anymore. So that's weird.
Oh, what will we do?
We were used to not
We have plenty.
Yeah, we were used to not looking for a topic for the episode, and now we were, just kidding, we already knew what we were talking about. But since it was fun, because for once we had to craft from nothing the discussion, so that's nice.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the people will be listening to this episode on the day it's released, but if you do, it might be at the exact same time that we are doing our panel at LeakyCon, so very excited.
Ooh, so people can listen to you while seeing you.
Oh my god, yeah.
Oh, how'd they get there when they're talking here?
I'm in two very different places on the globe at the very same time. That's amazing.
It's like magic.
Speaking of magic.
Anne's not here to do the transitions.
Yeah. We have a very magical magical person to thank, because this week is sponsored by our Patreon supporter, Susan S. So thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Susan.
Ooh, we appreciate you.
And I need to tell the listeners that Anne told us that the supporter of this week is supposed to be me.
So Marjolaine, thank yourself.
Thank you.
Thank you so much,
Marjolaine. Thank you, Marjolaine. That's so kind of you. Oh, you're welcome. I'm in two places on the same time and I'm talking to myself. It's wow. It's wow.
Multi-talented.
So I don't think we have news today, sadly, except that, yeah, LeakyCon is happening right now, but we were talking about that in the next episode, I guess, and what happened there. But no phoenix register, but we have another bird coming our way with some owls this time.
Yay!
So we have our post. The question was, why do you think Dumbledore didn't attempt the wedding? It's not the exact quote. I don't have it on my screen, but I think it's that.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, what are the reasons why Dumbledore didn't attend to the wedding? And Liz, it's you?
Yeah,
right?
That's me.
That suggests something. Do you want to share your opinion live? Because you did share a comment. On our social media.
My comment in our fun chats was simply that C-U-Z, there we go, he sucks, S-U-X, because how can you not want to attend the fun wedding of, like, the ultimate love story of this franchise, you know? Like, how can you just sit there on the bench outside and say, I'm going to stay in the cold and not go into that warm bakery and watch magic literally happen? But...
Because he's jaded, that's why.
I honestly, he has his reasons and it's not a big deal. I was just like, in the moment.
How do you turn down that invitation?
Really, though, especially, come on, you know, the food was going to be great.
Uh-huh.
At least yeah, the dessert, absolutely. Anyway.
Mm, that cake?
I'd go just for that.
Yeah, I would go too, absolutely. But we got other comments. We got Sal Manan on Facebook, and they say a reason more compassionate, maybe. Sorry, Liz.
Yeah, definitely.
I quote Sal. He just fought the love of his life and lost him for good. It would hurt too much to go to the wedding, maybe. Or maybe he wasn't invited. I don't know. But when he says, young love, he's thinking of his own, maybe, and remembering how simple it once was to just be in love, where only each other mattered and no one else. Who knows? I just think in the end, it was too painful for him. I can't think of any other reason that would make sense. I was more confused that Newt didn't ask him if he was coming in, or if he'd like to come in with him or something. True. But at the same time, I'm not surprised. So end of the quote. But yeah, I'm not surprised that Newt didn't invite him, because that's not the thing that Newt would thought of, I think. Like, would think of, like, yeah, maybe he's just waiting for an invitation. I don't know. Yeah, good thinking on Sal, I think. A mix of different things.
Yeah.
But do you think they invited him or no?
I feel like they would have to, right? I mean, Jacob and Albus are buds now.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I feel like he was invited. I think Sal's right that it's just more like, it's like hard for him to go in and be in a celebration of love. Like, he can watch it from a distance and be like happy for them, but it's hard for him to be there, I think.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, our last comment from Jerry, it was an email, right? So,
yeah.
So Jerry agrees with that. They say, I quote, "I am guessing that Dumbledore didn't attend the wedding since the thought of he couldn't marry his true love, and that his brother Aberforth hadn't been able to either, made weddings too sad for him. Also, the filmmakers wanted that balance of him traveling alone at the beginning and the end of the movie, and also at the beginning of the first HP movie." Yeah. That's, yeah, I love the throwback, the circle completed with the beginning of the movie and the beginning of the Harry Potter movies. That's really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, no matter what the reasons are for the character, this is a really, really good shot of him just walking away. Like, it tells us so much about his state of mind.
Yeah.
Just the, you know, lonely figure in the empty street with the snow and it's cold out. And yeah, it gives you that feeling of what he's feeling.
Yeah, a good ending. And thank you all for your comments. That was, yeah, very nice to...
They were very nice.
To read them.
So yeah. Much more eloquent than mine. nah, they make...
Straight to the point,
They totally make sense. And I definitely agree that of confusion over why didn't Newt, like, be like, oh, you know, are you coming? But also, Newt can be an awkward boy. So he may have just not wanted to ask.
Yeah. Or maybe Newt's like, yeah, you know, I don't really like gatherings like this either, so I get it, Dumbledore. Right.
He's like, I'm only here because I'm the best man.
I'd walk away too if I could.
And because Tina.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we know that Dumbledore doesn't need an invitation to go where he wants to, so yeah, he did that to the Dursley. He didn't wait an invitation to come, so yeah.
All right. Well, great owl post. Thank you, owls. Now, we'll head into our main discussion, which for the first time in, what, like a year, is not the screenplay.
Look, there was a lot of screenplay to cover.
Yes, but we are still talking about the movies, because obviously. So, our main discussion for this episode, we want to talk about the threads that go through all three movies, now that we have all three, you know, still holding out hope for 4 and 5, but if we've got three, we're going to talk about what we have to work with here. So we want to talk about the threads and storylines that ran through all three films and were wrapped up or were not wrapped up. So we'll start with the things that were followed through on here. First thing that came to mind for me was Grindelwald's involvement. It really spans all three films. I felt like they really laid out the groundwork well in the first film to set up the storyline, but I'm still very confused about the quote, "Will we die just a little?" We never found out what he means by that, and I'm so confused to this day, and that bugs me.
And especially the fact that he said that to Newt, because if it was a quote to Dumbledore, for instance, it would, but...
Right, you could write it off as like, oh, maybe that's like an in thing that they like talk about.
Yeah, and the fact that they are, will we die just a little, telling that to Dumbledore with the blood pact, and so it would make sense, but there, no, to Newt doesn't make sense. I mean, I love that we got a lot of interpretations. I don't remember all of them, but I remember that at some point I was, oh, that's a very good theory about that. But so it was a good point of discussion because it was so random that we could create theories around that. But yeah, we didn't even had a throwback in the end to understand this line of the first movie.
I mean, part of me wonders now, looking back, if it was introspective in a way, using we to like talk about himself and like the many different versions of himself that he has, and like in going through all of this and utilizing all the different versions, right? Because we see the, you know, so many of them. Will one of them end up getting killed off in one of these because it won't work for him anymore? Like, it won't be a face that works, or maybe him just dying a little because Dumbledore doesn't agree with him anymore, and that's sad when your lover doesn't agree with you anymore.
Oh. Or I wonder if this was even in the script and maybe Johnny Depp was just like, I need a line here, let me just make up some nonsense.
I mean, I would not be surprised, but but like you said, Liz, we got different versions of Grindelwald, and we got three actors actually, because of course the first actor who we got was Colin Farrell. Even if it was Grindelwald in disguise, it was still Grindelwald. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm thinking about it, and we got Mads Mikkelsen, I'm thinking of Fred throughout the movies. I realized that they are quite similar to these two versions. I mean, not in every aspect, because of course, Colin Farrell's version, it was Grindelwald pretending to be Graves, but it was still, I mean, even in the costume, it's more similar. I don't know, I thought it was, and the fact that they were very composed and very calm, and at some moment they were just exploding. Because we got that with Colin Farrell, with Graves, with Credence. It's in the first one that he got really aggressive to Credence just before he turned into an Obscurus. And it reminds me in the last one how Grindelwald get angry very suddenly against Credence too. So I don't know. I realized that they were quite... Yeah, they were more similar that I was thinking about before, but
It's a good point. I never really thought about comparing the Graves and later Grindelwald.
Yeah.
But they are, they're a lot more subdued.
Yeah, but I also like the fact that in these three movies and this three version, we got from the invisible threat to the villain in full glory on top of the mountain. It was really, and in the second, it was really the in-between. He's a real threat. Everyone knows about it. He's there, but still underground. And yeah, that's it's a good evolution. And I'm really, really curious of what they were planning for the two more movies for Grindelwald and his place, because this, it's the full climb. He would never go higher than he got in the third one, because we know he'd never get to fully take power, and at this point he was very close. So I'm really curious of what it would look like in the last two movies. But for what we got, it's a full climb and stop at the end, but still a very consistent climb.
Yeah.
Going off of that slightly, talking about like the climb, and in the different versions we saw of him, of like the invisible force and then the kind of stereotype wild crazy villain look, and then the more put together, I'm running for office, I have to look a certain way, mm-hmm. kind of vibe. I'm really curious what direction they would have continued to go, like how he would have continued to look. Like, is he still going to try to maintain, look, I'm that dignified, like well-dressed and kept kind of person? Or would we have seen him kind of retreat to the Johnny Depp style of appearance? Oh. Like, I'm really curious, because I feel like it says a lot about where he is trying to go and what he's trying to accomplish with how we see him. And I kind of wish that we could have seen where he ends up after everything.
Yeah. In my mind, I feel like after the events of movie 3, he would become sort of like unhinged because his plan failed, and he would be more like, well, I'm just going to take it by brute force then and just go like, you know, full on crazy right here. And I feel like that would be more like, yeah, maybe reverting back a little bit to the Johnny Depp styling, I guess.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never thought about that, but yeah. No, and that makes me even more frustrated that we still don't know if we will see this version. Because yeah. I want to see Mads Mikkelsen in this more desperate version of Grindelwald, like going back to more a less presentable approach and a more brute, I don't know, a more violent version. He would be great at it too, so.
I know. Yeah, because he really would have, like, nothing to lose at that point. And, like, if he's not going to get it by trying to be an acceptable version of his ideas, then, of course, he would probably just go, like, full on, okay, I'm just going to just pander to my base and just go wild.
Yeah.
Now I'm, like, in my feels about Grindelwald and, like, the misunderstood dude. And I'm like, no, Liz. He was not misunderstood. He was very clear about what he wanted and why he wanted it.
Yeah, but at the same time, his last line in the third movie is, I was never your enemy, not then, not now. So it's like he still want to convince that he's doing what needs to be done for the Wizarding World. So, but he can still have that in his mind and be wider about it. But,
yeah. So another storyline that really carries through all three films is Jacob and Queenie's romance. And I'm so glad we did get some closure on this in film 3, if that's all we're going to get. But this really, really tied together all three movies very well. And it was very much at the center of all three.
Yeah. And that's probably this specific ending that makes us feel the most like it could be the definite ending, because we have that that wedding at the end. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in every movie, it's the two of them together, then separated, then together, then separated again, then together again. But it's not something, it's it's not annoying, not at all. It's really the emotional heart of the movies, and yeah, and we go through every emotion with the two of them, and so feel good in the first one, so horrible in the second, and the trauma, and then the happy ending in the third. That's, yeah, that's very powerful. And at the same time, the fact that it's a Muggle and a witch in the political climate, the influence of Grindelwald, it's all embodied in their couple. So, and it makes it, it's the most relatable reason to fight Grindelwald is to allow the two of them to be together. So, yeah.
Well, we had a lot of romantic storylines kind of going, right, between Newt and Tina, and then what little we got of, like, Theseus with others. So I'm glad that we got closure on at least one of them, that they're not all just an empty kind of, well, that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I walked into watching this movie with the assumption it was going to be the last one, and with that mindset, which is really bad. But just, you know, with everything going on and stuff, it felt like I should meet her expectations for myself and not get excited about what could come, because then I just get disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, with that in mind, it was a good ending. You know, if that's how it ends, they defeated the baddie, we got love prevailed, you know, it was good. And it was nice to see them be happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that the filmmakers expected people to latch on to Jacob and Queenie so much?
I mean,
like, I wonder if they were always supposed to be this much, like, at the center of these films, or if it was very much a response of, like, wow, people really love them. Okay, we got to keep them going.
I mean, they chose in the very first movie to have the last shot be the two of them. So they created the context for us to care about, because the fact that the ending we have in the first movie, it makes such an impact and a happy feeling impact of what type of feeling you remember for the first movie is also this ending of Queenie going back to the bakery to find Jacob. So yeah, the last shot is not Newt, it's the two of them, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is so interesting, because I feel like usually when you get this, and it's these characters that you root for through the whole thing, usually it's, like, the main characters, or at least one of them is, like, the main. Like, I mean, Jacob and Queenie are, like, in the main four, but they're not Newt. So, like, it's interesting that... this is that romance that, like, we really all got super invested in. I think it's cool, like, to use that as, like, a side thing to really get people in.
Well, now that you've mentioned it, Marjo, about, like, them being the last bit of the first movie, almost, like, reinforces to me that maybe that was their end goal in terms of, like, what romantic storyline they were going to focus on. Because, like, I think I mention it later in, like, our discussion. We know the end game of Newt and Tina already, right? Like, that's already canon when we went into this. So we don't necessarily need to see it happen because we know it did. We just need to see how they met and maybe how it developed. And we did get a good chunk of that. We got a really adorable meet cute. Like, we got the things that canon didn't give us already. But that was, like, truly their chance to develop something new and be, you know, theoretically surprising, right? Since we didn't know how that would go.
Yeah. And it worked really well.
So well.
Yeah.
So another thing that we get from the beginning to the end is Credence's quest to find out who he is. That starts out in the first movie, obviously very heavy in the second movie, and then in the third we get that resolution of who he is. Personally, I'm satisfied with how this ended, mostly because I didn't see it coming, and I never thought Aberforth would be part of this scenario, which is weird because we knew he was going to be in the film. I don't know how, you know, we never connected those dots, but I think because I was surprised, I was happy with how it went, because I don't necessarily like to always, you know what's coming.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was surprised by this Aberforth story, but the quest to find who he is, it really started in the second one, because, and I think the real thread is Credence trying to, I mean, it's connected, but Credence trying to find his place and maybe, yeah, to find a family in the more broader sense. In the first one, he wants to be part of the wizarding world, and it's in the second one that he realized, at the end of the first one, he realized, okay, the wizarding world is afraid of me, they don't want me, they try to kill me, so I need to find my blood family to find people who will accept me. And and yeah, it's that what stays in the second and the third one. But
yeah,
very tragic story.
Oh, Credence.
You guys are getting me too in my feels, too early in the morning for me. Listeners, just so people know, I'm on the West Coast. It is before 7 a.m. for me right now. Whoa. It is too early to be in these feels.
Yeah, I'm still not convinced that they went through all they planned for Credence. Because I remember at the end of the first movie, Rowling and the producers, they were in interviews, they were saying like things like Credence would be almost the main character of the rest of the franchise, something like that. Or I don't know if they say the main character, but one of the most important character. And maybe it's kind of what's happening in the second, but I'm not sure. Because so much is happening in the second movie. But in the third one, definitely not. He has a very important role to play at the end, but it's not focused on him. So,
yeah.
But part of me wonders if he was meant to be, I don't think antithesis is the right word, but like the opposite of what Newt is, right? Because Newt didn't go looking to like do some of these things. He kind of stumbled into it. Right, he was just trying to get Frank home, and right, but is taking it up. Whereas Credence, especially in, I feel like it's embodied mostly in the second film, is seeking it out. Right, he wants to be a part of this. He's trying to like wedge his way in, and I feel like we would have seen more of that and the true difference between Credence and Newt's involvement in everything and like why they were involved if we'd gotten more.
Yeah.
And the second one, they definitely, I mean, the main thing is we want to save Credence. It's that. And in the third one, it's more like, oh, he's going to die, so whatever.
You gotta wonder. That's weird. If that was the plan, though. Like, if the plan was to have him theoretically die between movies 3 and 4 because of everything. Because with everything they set up in movie 2, it just feels like they wanted so much more for the character, but maybe that's part of what we're supposed to have, is it's meant to be a tragic, like, he was destined for so much more that he didn't get to do.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, part of me wonders if the Aberforth storyline was a fix, just to, like, get to the end quicker, and they had a different plan for who he really was. And then another part of me wonders if the Aberforth story was what they were planning to go for, but maybe there was more involved and we would have gotten more info and backstory had it been allowed to continue for 4 and 5. Like, I wonder if Aberforth, and maybe we wouldn't have actually known who Credence was until movie 4 or something like that, to like lay the groundwork more. Because I feel like there are still some unanswered questions in regards to that whole situation, but I guess we'll probably never know.
Yeah.
Part of it makes me so mad because I want to know, right? I want all the ends tied up and I want what we were promised. But I also don't want to wait a decade for a movie and all the actors have aged out of it. Like, you know?
Yeah. So, now that we know who Credence is, I wanted to circle back to everyone's favorite prophecy. Because we haven't spent enough time trying to figure this out. Okay, so I'm going to read it again, and let's see if it makes sense to us now after our in-depth rewatch. A son cruelly banished, despair of the daughter, return great avenger with wings from the water. I don't know.
The son cruelly banished, it still works.
Right.
It's still, yeah. Despair of the daughter, too. It's Oriana. It works.
Mm-hmm.
But the great avenger, is it Credence? I guess we can consider that he avenged what happened to Ariana because of Grindelwald by getting Albus to destroy the blood trough. So in a way, it's because he faced Grindelwald and that Albus and Aberforth decide to protect him, that he, yeah, he's the reason why Albus is able to defeat Grindelwald. That is the, and Grindelwald is the reason, I mean, yeah, the main reason why Ariana is dead. So that's a type of revenge, I guess.
He does set that into motion, the whole, yeah, because they're trying to protect him when they fire those spells, and that's what breaks the blood trough.
I mean, could it also, if we think of it from, like, the great avenger, he ultimately in that moment didn't let the Obscurial consume him and destroy him the way it was likely going for Ariana. Because from what we know, right, she had what seemed to be a much more negative experience with the Obscurial inside of her than Credence did. And he kind of, in a way, overcame that and, like, became something new for his family line. Even if we don't get to see it and he doesn't survive and, you know, yada yada, he kind of did what Ariana couldn't do, even with all of the support around her.
Yeah, because he sort of harnessed the Obscurus and, like, channeled it.
Yeah.
So do we think With Wings from the Water is still about the boat? Because technically he was on the boat.
Yeah, but he also returned from the United States to Europe with a phoenix, so it works too on this side. Like, he returned with the phoenix, so with wings through the water, through the water. So no, it's from the water, but it's through the water. I don't know. Through the ocean. So
that feels like it makes more sense than just him as a baby on a boat. Knowing what we know now,
right? And remembering the, was it on the trailer, the title thing, where they made the phoenix out of the water?
Yeah. I think it's kind of in the poster too, right?
Yeah, I think so.
In one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like Despair of the Daughter could either be Ariana or Credence's mother.
That's true.
Like, Despair of the Daughter, because they took away the son and Aberforth.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Works too. But we don't know anything about this girl. I want to know.
I know. At least,
I don't know. We don't even have a name or something like that. It's nothing. And we don't even know if Aurelius is really the name that was given to him by his mother, or is it something that Grindelwald totally made up? Because they don't use it in the last movie, in the third movie, so
right,
they go back to Credence. Even Albus is calling Credence, so and Aberforth, he doesn't, I mean, I don't think he don't even use the name Credence, so maybe, I don't know, but we don't even know what his birth name is.
So even the things that, like, we feel like did get wrapped up, there's still questions attached.
Yeah, it gets wrapped up, but not the way it was supposed to be in the first thread that they gave us, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so the next thing is Newt's mission to educate people about magical creatures in the publication of his book. So this was a big part of movie one and how we sort of get introduced to the character. Movie two, we know the book's been published. He's like a celebrity, sort of, because people know about the book. And movie three, he's obviously still working with creatures. So, I don't know. This is a weird one because I do think that the theme carries through all the films, but not necessarily literally.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a lot of times it's used as a way to show like how people and humans act against things that they don't understand, and the beasts are like a metaphor for that, and Newt's mission to educate is a metaphor for that. I mean, we get the whole Grindelwald and people who are like, you know, labeling muggles as other, and so that's how they're acting against them out of fear a lot of times for things they don't know. So I think it does carry through, but sometimes a lot more metaphorically than it does literally.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. I mean, it started quite, like you said, it started very well with, they explained very well how he's the only magizoologist and why his work is important for him. And his book, they talk a lot about his book too, that is going to be published. But after that, it's just, it begin, these facts are just background facts. And like the fact that in the third one, we just have Lali mentioning that she uses his book for her student. But it's just one line, and we don't see how, we see that he become a celebrity. He becomes a celebrity because of his work, but we don't see how his work really impact society. We don't see an evolution, I think, in the, I don't think so, at least, that we see an evolution on, it's not focused on that, at least, because it's supposed to be the reason why Newt Scamander is so well known, is because he really changed the how wizards are, and witches are seeing the magical creatures. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not focused on that. It's not the, even for Newt's character, it's not a character growth that we see. It's not impacting him that much, the fact that he has this impact on society. So.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked to see more of the correlation, because I feel like it was in the second film when we see Grindelwald has that little chupacabra and then he just chucks him out the window. And you're just like, wow, okay. Yeah. Like, that's very representative of how he treats people. And then we see that opposite in Newt with the Kelpie and, you know, how he's not trying to, like, break the creature of its spirit, but rather adapt and learn more about it. And I wish we would have seen more imagery like that, because I feel like it really reinforces the type of people that we were being introduced to and what we could expect from them.
We have that with the chilling quite a lot with Grindelwald.
I feel like there could have been
killing the chilling. Yeah,
like I feel like we could have had more there though, because ultimately it could have been anything subbed in for the chillin', in my opinion. Like, the chillin' itself isn't what did it. They could have subbed in anything, this rare plant that, you know, he could have used the sap from. Like, there was nothing to me that made it uniquely, it had to be a creature, and this is why, other than Newt is involved.
Yeah, true. So this discussion really segues pretty well into our next point of the beasts. So were they present through all three films? And, like, did their role keep the storyline moving forward?
Yeah.
tentative, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's quite different in the... I think it's not the most consistent thing that we have in the free movies. It's the way the beasts are used is... I mean, we still have the Niffler and Pickett as a very consistent presence and comic relief and useful ally throughout, more or less useful or chaotic ally in the different movies. So that's we have that. But yeah, in the first one, I think it's there are a lot of... We have a lot of beasts, and they are well used to present Newt to us. Like I said, we discover Newt through his creature, but it's also more pretext to little action scenes and tools for the plot, like the Thunderbird and the Swooping Evil, and they conveniently there at the right time in the plot, but it's not the real heart of the plot is the Obscurus, which is not really a beast. And in second one, it's the one where we have not so many beasts, and they are more like the Zuhu. They still are important in what they represent, but and we have cute use of the beast to build relationship between the characters, but not so present. And in the main plot line, we have no beast involved. I don't think so, at least. And in the third one, I think it's the only one where we have really a beast in the center of the plot, with the chilling, and how, I mean, we have other things happening around, but the heart of what moves the story is the chilling. And that's the only movie where we have really a beast in the center. So
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely there. But yeah, they don't fully drive the story. Besides the first one, obviously. So another thing that really continues through all of the films is Jacob's dream of opening his bakery. And this is such a wholesome part of these movies. I love that it's constant. He wants it from the start of the first film, and he gets it in the end of the first film, and we end up right back there at the start and end of movie 3. And I love the bookends. It's so good.
Yeah, I love that too. And how, because we don't see at all the bakery in the second movie, I think.
Yeah, I was trying to remember, and I don't think we do.
No, because we don't go to New York at all. I mean, yeah, we at the beginning for Grindelwald's escape, but we don't see Jacob and Queenie in New York at all. So we don't see the bakery, and we were worried about the bakery, what will happen. But yeah, the fact that they used this place a lot in the third one. And in very telling scene for Jacob and at first, and for everyone in the end, that's nice. I like it.
Mm-hmm. It felt like the good happy moment from getting it to then being sad in it when Queenie's gone. To then like being happy in it again, right? And like business going theoretically well enough that he could hire someone to help him. Did he have someone helping him in the second movie? I don't remember.
We don't even know what's happening. Yeah. We didn't even know what's happening for the bakery in the second movie, because he's away for a bit of time, and we don't know.
Maybe his helper in the third movie, maybe he hired him in the second movie, and that's who was running the bakery in his absence.
Maybe. That could make sense, because I can't imagine it was just... that he could afford to just have it be closed and not like lose the space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that real estate in New York, rent's not cheap.
Well, look how much it took for him to get the loan to buy, to, you know, to get into the real estate, like, you know.
Maybe he saved a little bit of Okami shells for hard times.
Maybe Newt's been slipping to him this whole time. You know, he has a couple extra, a package just appears on the doorstep of the bakery. Jacob's like, all right, this is the rainy day fund. This is going away for a bit into the safe.
And then on to a darker theme, the Obscurus. So this definitely is through all three movies via Credence. So I do feel like the dots connected on this one, but at the same time, there's still a lot of unanswered questions, as we already sort of brought up when talking about Credence. On one hand, it makes sense that Grindelwald sought him out to try and use an Obscurus against Dumbledore, knowing what he knows about Ariana and how that would affect and resonate with Albus. And obviously, especially once he found out who Credence really was, that deepens that quite a bit. But if Obscurial are so rare, what are the odds that there are two in one family? So that's kind of a weird one.
Yeah. I'm still wondering, because they always say, yeah, they are so rare. We didn't have any Obscurials in America for centuries. But I wonder if it's more like a wizard arrogance to think that they are so rare. And because the fact that Obscurus exist is kind of a failing from the wizarding world as a society. Because if a magical child is becoming obscure, it's because they are mistreated or they don't feel allowed to express their magic. So I wonder if it's more like, oh yeah, it doesn't exist because we sorted that out, and there is no reason for children to become obscure anymore. And maybe there is more obscure than anyone. There is, in fact, more obscure than anyone thought. So maybe, yeah, maybe that's the underlining of having two in the same family, but it's still a lot. I mean, it's kind of a cursed family anyway, the Dumbledores, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I do feel like Credence being an Obscurus did act as an engine to try and fill in the Ariana backstory and do it, like, confront it actually in the films and on screen rather than speculation. But we still lacked quite a bit of that story, I feel like.
Yeah.
Something that the Obscurus did do was drop those hints that Credence was connected somehow to the Dumbledores early on. I know a lot of our ideas of how that was the case were pretty out there in comparison to what it really was. But at least that did drop that clue, like, very early in the franchise of, hey, this guy is definitely connected to the Dumbledores in some way. Mm-hmm. You'll find that out later.
You're gonna have to wait a hot while, but you'll find it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm always gonna want to know more about it. Mm-hmm. Like, why do the two people we know in canon, I guess, that had it were Dumbledores? Like, there's something I'm always gonna want to know about it, because it's paranormally to me an aspect, right? It's kind of like Boggarts. Like, we're never gonna quite know everything about Boggarts. We know that they're there. We know that they take different forms. We know that they impact people, but we're never gonna quite know everything about it. And my brain doesn't like that. Like, I want to know all the pieces. You know.
Yeah, and also because I really think the Obscurus is the best addition to the lore of this world that we got in this franchise. I think it's very, very powerful image. It allows to treat very dark themes, but very important themes. And that's, Yeah, that's what fascinated me in the first movie. But again, I totally agree with you about we are missing some pieces still. And also the reason why Credence survives so old with an Obscurus, and to finally, I mean, it's the big surprise in the first movie, like, oh, he's the Obscurial, but he's too old to be alive. In the second one, it's like, oh, I don't remember if it's explained in the, if it's a theory in the first movie or if it appears in the second one, like, oh, the reason why he survives is because he's from a big family. And I don't like this reason. Even yeah. If it's a Lestrange or a Dumbledore, I don't think it's a, I mean, yeah.
Especially when we think about the environment he was in, because it wasn't like he was just adopted and was in like a happy muggle family. He was in like an environment that actively wanted to suppress and destroy magic with the bare bones. And like, right, he was in like a very magic negative environment. So I feel like that should have like almost sped up the timeline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also if he, for whatever reason, whatever background or I don't know, personal magic, succeed to control the Obscurus, why suddenly in the third one, the Obscurus is killing him when he was so powerful in the first 20 years of his life? I don't know how many years. There is no explanation why suddenly. I mean, it's like the Obscurus going back to its normal form to be a parasite eating the host. But I don't know why.
Did he maybe like, and maybe it wasn't shown to us. Did he maybe like somehow? What is the word I'm looking for? Like lose the upper hand he had in that relationship, because like it was definitely a very parasitic relationship for both things, arguably, but he at least knew how to like harness it in his favor in the second movie. Mm-hmm. And you gotta wonder if like maybe the revelation from Grindelwald, like, you have a family and this is the family you're a part of, like if that, the toll mentally of that caused him to lose the upper hand he had in that scenario. Mm-hmm. So it went back to not being like a mutually parasitic in relationship, but like a purely parasitic, you are the host, I'm eating the host kind of relationship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or do you like think this idea. He maybe overused it?
Ooh, that's true.
Like by trying to use it for his own gain and unleashing it so much, do you think it slowly just took over him?
Maybe, yeah.
Because he was giving into becoming the Obscurus, basically, to go on these rampages. So maybe the more he became that side of himself, the more that side took over and there was less Credence.
Yeah, like he let it in enough. Oh, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's
great,
also
great
like,
theories. That's very interesting.
Yeah, this speaks to that gap of time, too, between movies 2 and 3 that we really don't know what happened, that if there was that large gap of time, then, you know, this could have been happening and eating away at him for longer than what we see.
Yeah, and that reminded me that we didn't got what I was expecting. I wanted a training montage with Credence learning to control the Obscurus. Mm-hmm. And it would be the best place to see the effect of that on him. And yeah, oh, I love this stuff in fantasy stories where I don't know, somebody has to control the dark powers and it has an effect on them. And yeah, it's so interesting. And there we didn't got that, we just had the sad ending. But yeah.
I wonder too, because we don't really see a ton of Credence actually learning magic. If he's just been like overusing that the obscurial inside him like this whole time to like fund his magic, because he hasn't learned how to like appropriately wield his magical energy. You know, like it didn't look like Grindelwald was teaching him things. unless we missed that part, that bonding.
There was no swish and flick, yeah. That's for sure.
Maybe there was an Avada Kedavra in there, but I feel like there wasn't a lot of training that went into that, you know?
Yeah, but that's what I was expecting to see, really a training, but we didn't got that, yeah.
We need to just redo the movies with everything we want to see in them. Fan project.
All right, so when I organized this discussion, this made sense, and I organized the second half with the things that we still have questions about, but we still have questions about the things that, like, continue through all three films, too. So we're just inquisitive people, and we want to know everything, even if things were satisfactory to a general audience. We're a little bit obsessive, so we want everything, and we want it now.
Yeah, it's not there. It's not the lost thread, because the first point, the thread go throughout, but we still want to make more notes, on the thread. And there we just lost them.
Disappeared. It got cut off too short.
Everything needs to be tied up in a bow, every last thing, forever.
Yes. All right, so the second half of the discussion is those things that maybe were brought up but didn't continue, and there was no attempt to resolve them. The first one is Newt's expulsion from Hogwarts. So this was obviously brought up by Graves/Grindelwald in the first movie, but was never fully explained. We just kind of assume that Dumbledore was successful in stopping the expulsion because Newt still has his wand and he's still, like, a fully functioning adult wizard, but it was never confirmed.
Yeah, I just kind of wonder if it became, like, what a lot of the Newt canon became, right? Like, we didn't actually get to see him be with Tina because we already knew that going in. And I kind of, if it's mm-hmm. one of those, they're like, we don't need to spend time on it. People know he was, like, potentially expelled, and that Dumbledore fixed that, but he has a wand and it's good. Like, we don't need to explain it. Like, it feels like the more we get into this, the more Newt got the shaft in a series that's literally named after him and his book.
Like, he's got to sue for rights of this, because
he needs to sue for emotional this didn't work damage. Out. Like, look, he had a lot of emotional damage in his life with all of this. He was just trying to let Frank go and go about his life. But no, he got pulled into the
door. Those Dumbledores.
Because I also kind of find it hard to believe that there would be some exception just for Newt. That, like, oh, he was expelled, but it's fine in this time period. They can keep their wands. No big deal. Like, I feel like that wouldn't be a thing.
Unleashing not fully trained wizards into the world just seems like a bad idea. Credence, case in point.
Yeah, but it's such, I mean, the way that it was introduced in the first movie, it was really looking like, I mean, it's not just us expecting every piece of lines to be followed by something big. But in this case, it's really, I mean, they even choose in the second movie to do Hogwarts flashbacks. And even with that, they didn't take the occasion to cover the incident that they were referring to in the first one. Because I think it was, like you said, it could have been an occasion to explore, I mean, ethical dilemma that Newt would have throughout his life, of putting people in danger because of a beast, or I don't know. But if the incident in Hogwarts involved magical creature, and we also got the theory, but I think that is pure fun theory, but that Lita was involved in that, but Even if Lita is not involved in that, I think it would have been a good character exploration to consider the first time that Newt made a choice that maybe was hurtful for some humans, but because he preferred to save a beast, or I don't know. But it would have been something interesting to explore. But
there was no time. Nope. Too busy watching Grindelwald get to power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or exploring a very complicated Lestrange family drama.
See, and that's just like, the more we talk in this discussion, the more it reinforces to me that like Newt should have just had his own movie, and then we should have had the trilogy of focusing on Grindelwald and Dumbledore and that dynamic. Like, why did we need to combine them all?
Yeah. Another thing that fell by the wayside was Flamel's magical phone book that he uses in the second movie to contact Lolly. I really thought this was going to come up again.
Right? Yes, especially in this third movie, right? It should have come up. Honestly, lost opportunity.
Yeah, it wasn't that difficult to include that. I mean, yeah, it didn't even need to be very central or very important, but yeah, that's really weird. But for me, I really wanted that to be important in the third movie. I wanted to know more about this whole underground network of intellectuals working together against Grindelwald, and throughout the world, the fact that it was, professors and experts from around the world, that was really exciting. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think they still can use that if they want. Maybe not in the Fantastic Beasts movie, but I mean, like something in other movie franchise or
mm-hmm.
related to the Wizarding World or even a TV show, I don't know, but it's a really good idea that you can have so many stories around that. So
I was thinking that too, like this would make an excellent TV series mm-hmm. because you could use the book to transition from storyline to storyline, because if you open the book and you've got your little character on the page and then like you do a little zoom in on the page and then boom, we're with that character now. Like just lends itself so well.
Yeah.
Hire me, WB. I'll do it.
One of those really good like episodic drama kind of, or I don't know if it'd be a drama. I'd hope like a dramedy, you know, some intense, some comic relief, you know. Oh, that would be so, so good. See, I also feel like they could have done something really interesting in Grindelwald's, like, you know, he's trying to run for political office and he needs these connections that he like somehow steals the book to like figure out how to contact these people.
Ooh.
You know, I feel like that could have been something interesting, because am I supposed to just believe that he somehow like knows all of the people within like the German Ministry of Magic and that they're all just willing to do things for, like, am I supposed to really believe that?
Well, this just, it could have been explained so well with just a line from Jacob, even. Like, if Jacob was, like, watching Flamel flip through this book and be like, what's that? And then, like, Flamel explains, oh, these are all of my contacts. And then Jacob is like, oh, like a phone book. You know, like, just, like, something like that would just, like, make it make more sense. It's just not explained. It's just there.
Yeah, and I see, I don't know, I also see, like, an opportunity for an espionage thing, like having contact around the world to know what's happening, and it would be really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best plot point when you have a war background setting to have espionage stories. That's just the best thing to do. So
speaking of lost opportunities. Nagini, where is she?
Who is she?
I will die on this hill, because she was one of the most important characters to me as someone that literally was being steadily turned into a creature and like was losing parts of herself because of that. Not just in like a personal sense, but like her body, her like bodily autonomy and like being forced to be in this, you know, show. She has no way out of it. And what we know happened to the character, like, it would have been such, like, mm-hmm. an important symbolic thing, especially to have in Secrets of Dumbledore with the stuff regarding the chill, and like it could have been such a great counterpoint and like showing things. And I recognized there were, it was like scheduling stuff, right? It was why she couldn't be in it with the delays and COVID.
It was COVID.
Yeah.
She was stuck in Korea, I think.
Which, like, fair.
I was so excited for that storyline. I'm so sad we didn't get it.
Mm-hmm. It would have been, like, so symbolic in so many different ways. And her name is right on the tip of my tongue. The author of the Snape book.
Oh, Laurie?
Yeah.
Laurie Kim?
Yeah, because she writes really great stuff about Nagini and her place within.
Yeah.
Reading her content. It's wonderful, and I'm hoping she presents again at the academic conference this year so I can hear more of it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you, and that's really great points. At the same time, when I'm listening to you, I'm wondering what if they plan something in the third movie for her. What could it be? Because I don't see any clues of, oh, we are missing. Because we kind of see where Tina would be if they could have Catherine Waterstone on set. But for Nagini, I'm not sure where they... And I'm wondering if they plan something between, a separate storyline with Nagini and Kama, because it's kind of what was hint at the end of second movie. It's Kama saving Nagini. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering, because we don't have a lot from Kama. He has maybe two lines or three lines in the movie. And I'm wondering if they plan something more substantial for him and Nagini, and they try to put him in another place once they cut Nagini for these reasons. So yeah, I'm really not sure. But at the same time, like you said, it would be so interesting, but also very difficult to write sensibly. And but they could do it. I'm sure they could. But at the same time, it was very, very risky to explore this character storyline and be very sensitive about it and very, very, not offensive about it. Yeah.
That makes me wonder potentially if maybe the plan for Nagini could have been either to be what Kama was in the film, right? That she's the one that goes and is like, I want to be on your side. Or that she went with Credence anyway, right? She and Credence very clearly have a very like substantial bond from the very short time we see them, and that they appear to know each other for, because it's not like they've known each other for eons. And part of me wants to think that her being around Grindelwald and seeing the treatment of the Chilin may have made her, like, given her like an empowerment moment of, oh, like, just because it's a creature doesn't mean it has to succumb to these things. Like, it can fight back. And her having that realization of, well, even though I turn into one, I still have the humanity and the ability to fight back now, and that I should use it. Mm-hmm. Like, part of me hopes that it could have been like a nice empowerment thing like that. But, you know, I'm not confident that they would have seen it that way.
Yeah, that's a great idea. That would be really, really interesting. Yeah. And it would make sense to, because definitely Nagini is with the crew on Hogwarts Bridge at the end of movie 2. Mm-hmm. But they could, like you said, put her in this, or maybe she decided to be the spy for Grindelwald, and it would be easier for her to tell Grindelwald, and therefore for Credence. And and it makes sense. And even if Grindelwald would have no reason to question that. And and for the rest, exactly what you said would be a very good story.
Hear me out real quick. What if the whole Credence is related to Aberforth? That's how the story effectively removes him from Grindelwald. What if Nagini was supposed to be the way to remove Credence from that influence, to pull him back? like, towards the Dumbledore side of things, like, in her going in there and, like, because he trusts her, right? And they have that bond. Like, maybe that was what she was supposed to be, was the how to pull Credence back to the light kind of vibe, rather than a Aberforth effectively being that in the, you know, in the I'm finding my dad role.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. But I still like what they did with the mirrors and the yeah, that's very, it's a bit confusing at first, but it's really very emotional for me. But yeah, you're right. She could have been this influence too.
I need the magic that they use to make the mirrors happen. Like, what fun
stuff. I mean, we have texting, so that...
I wouldn't be able to do that.
Here we go again, wanting all the answers.
I just want all... My anxious brain doesn't like loose ends. It wants everything tied up, or I circle and I'm like, it could be all these things. And in this case, that's like a good thing. Theorizing's okay, but like in life, that's not great.
So another thing that really doesn't get tied up is Tina and Newt, which we've already discussed. You know, we know this is Endgame, but I still felt shortchanged.
Yeah, we could have gotten a little more, even like, because we got the meet cute, which was very cute, even just a little more of like though them working together in the third one to kind of solidify that, wow, we make a really good team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's also not the, I mean, we have our, not stereotypical, but we have our perfect in quote couple with Queenie and Jacob, but there we have a very different type of dynamic with two very different personalities than Queenie and Jacob. But it was also the interesting thing to see this type of romance grow, and romance with very awkward and cute people. But I really, really love that dynamic. I mean, everybody loved that dynamic, but it's we didn't, I mean, for me it's the main reason why it can't be over, because we didn't even had a kiss, even if we know the end. We needed that. We need at least that. So,
see, yeah, it's fun because they both, like, both relationships have kind of the same start, right? Like, you could argue they're both kind of like insta love kind of things, that there's clearly an attraction between Jacob and Queenie from the get go, but there's also that like kind of allurement between Tina and Newt from the get go, even if it's like not as obvious on Tina's side. I feel like she's very like, who is this guy? What is he doing? You know? And then to see it go in two very different directions is really fun and satisfying.
Yeah. They're the slow burn for sure.
A heck of slow burn.
Yeah, at this point, it's too slow. It's, yeah, no. We are frantically blowing at the ashes to have that back. To have this burn back.
So something else from the first film that I felt like was kind of a missed opportunity for more backstory was the Bare Bones, which from Pottermore, we know that the Bare Bones were Scours, dating back to the Salem witch trials, and they had a role in the largest breach of the Statute of Secrecy, which led to Rappaport's Law being passed, which is the no intermingling with nomadges rule. But we really could have gotten more in the films. Like, all of that info is not from the films.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I also felt like Modesty was going to come back later, and that she had a bigger role to play than just being the red herring in the first film, too.
Right, like, we could have had that mirroring kind of thing, especially in the third, as the war is, you know, rising, the tensions are rising, and to kind of see how that's also happening in the Muggle world, that it's, like, spilling over, and, like, just to show the overall impact that Grindelwald had, that it was just so large and, like infinite could have been really interesting.
Yeah, and I'm just imagining an alternative story in my head while you were mentioning modesty, but we don't know anything of what happened to her, but wouldn't it be kind of interesting to have her in, I don't know why she would turn to Jacob, but turn to Jacob and Jacob being like, I don't remember if Jacob even met Modesty in the first movie, so maybe he has no idea who she is, but I don't know if I would love to have this storyline with Jacob taking care of this little girl and she turned to be magical, and that would be another reason for Jacob to go back to the wizarding world, of course to find Queenie, but also because now he has this magical girl to care about. But yeah, no, I don't know why I thought of that. Aww. But
it'd be so cute to see Jacob like taking her to get on the Hogwarts Express.
Yeah. That would have been fun.
I mean, if they are in the States, that would probably be even more near not Hogwarts Express, but but still, yeah. I guess I want Jacob to be a dad, and that's what I wanted to see too. And
such dad energy from him.
Yeah.
So then something that starts in movie 2 and carries through movie 3 is the blood pact. But there's still a lot of questions about that too.
Yeah, I added this on because I'm just like, we're like, okay, it's Dumbledore and Grindelwald's thing. But I feel like everything else, we could have gotten more like, was this a common thing to do at the time, like with your friends? Was this like something that had been done before? Like,
just like friendship bracelets?
Well, you know, because nobody seems to question it. Like, he shows this necklace. Nobody questions it, really. They're just like, oh, yeah, that tracks. Okay. Like, is this a common thing? Like, I'm sorry. If someone told me and I'm like helping them fight this big bad and they're like, oh, yeah, so, you know, story, we had like a thing as kids, we were besties and we made this blood pact and it's why I can't do this, I'd be like, what? Like, I feel like we could have gotten a lot more to it in terms of like a depth and like the emotional connotations behind it, even if it was just it's really rare that people have this kind of connection to be able to make something like this, you know?
Yeah, or like this is like an extreme act.
Yeah, I agree. It's weird that I don't know if everybody recognize what it is, but at least Fissures recognize, and Newt knows. I don't remember. At the end, he shows to Albus the thing, and I don't remember actually. Does he say he knows what it is, or is it Albus who told him what it is? But at least we have Fissures knowing exactly what it is. And I don't know if they... Fissures is not surprised that Dumbledore made a blood pact, but he still seem... I mean, it's still... Yeah, he's not shocked, but at the same time, Fissures is not shocked by anything in this movie. He's like totally stunned and distanced. He distanced himself for everything. It's just... But, yeah.
Like, nobody seems surprised that Dumbledore isn't willing to, like, or that he isn't just doing the thing himself, which makes me wonder, like, are blood packs, like, on record somewhere? Like, when they're made, is there, like, some list in the ministry that's like, blah, 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 there it is? So, like, people can look and see? I don't know. There's just, it's such an interesting concept that something like that could have such power over them. And that they created the thing that has that much power over them. Yeah. And that we don't know more about it.
Yeah, because I really thought it was their thing. It was a creation of Albus and Gellert. But you're right. The fact that other people recognize what it is, it doesn't track. But apart from that, I'm quite satisfied of this idea and what they did with it. Because it was... yeah, it was a quite powerful way to show us their relationship and the complex feelings. And and I still think, yeah, the end of that in movie 3 is very, very powerful. So
I agree.
I like what they did, but I agree that there is some thing lacking in the background of that.
Uh-huh. Is that maybe just a canon thing? Did we know about that before this movie? I don't remember.
No, it's a new thing. Yeah, so new addition to the lore. Yeah.
Can't even rely on people know it's there, so can't even rely on them. It definitely was a nice ending, in my opinion. To kind of that destruction of it, but I feel like it would have been even more impactful if we'd had the earlier of this is what it took to make it, or you know, something like that.
And the introduction of that, I mean, the scene in the second movie with the mirror of Erised and Albus looking at the scene, the memory, that's a really beautiful scene too. So
yeah. And then another thing that Liz added in here is Theseus. Just Theseus.
So in rewatching, because I rewatched yesterday all of them, shout out Max, to like prep myself, and the more like I saw him, the more he just feels like a missed opportunity, because like he has to watch the love of his life literally like get sucked into a vortex and die, which is pretty traumatic, and I feel like we don't see a lot of that moving into the third film. Like I feel like it's a really missed opportunity to show like men's mental health and the grief that he could still be experiencing, even if it's not necessarily outward, but like the bottle effect, you know, he's kept it inside, and then there's just like a moment where he has like this really intense outburst over something, and that's like the manifestation of it. I also don't particularly like that the film killed a person of color only to reintroduce a new person of color to like saddle him up with. It just feels really lazy, and I really don't like that. Like, oh, you were with a woman of color, she's dead, here's another one. Like that, it just feels really sad and you know, bad.
Yeah, I love both of the characters, but saying the fact that you're saying like that, I agree.
Yeah,
like it feels like they're like, well, we can just put her in, and I'm like, no, these are two very different characters, very different. Like backstories, very different dynamics with Theseus. Like,
yeah,
that's a good thing. That's a good thing that we don't have another Lita. We have a very different person. But I agree that's still, yeah.
I just feel like his character as a whole is a missed opportunity, because we get some of it. I feel like in the second movie, right, that characterization of look, they're two brothers, but one is like definitely the more extrovert, like charming, you know, whatever, and then Newt. But I feel like we could have really seen a different side to Theseus in the third film, and I'm bummed we didn't.
I agree. Yep.
Yeah, totally agree. And yeah. I think the closest we got is the fact in the end that he's the last one to stare at where Grindelwald disappeared, but and turned into Grindelwald to Dumbledore, like, promise me you will fight him now. But that's it's not enough. It's definitely not enough.
Yeah, for me, like, this is kind of a twofer. Like, both Theseus and Lita, I feel like there was so much more that could have been done. And just not even seeing, not even just Theseus, but like any of the characters really mourn Lita. It's kind of weird,
especially and like the timeline that we think happened, it hasn't been that long.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know, it kind of threw me when I saw the movie the first time. I was like, oh, so we're just pretending that didn't happen, okay.
with this third movie, I was okay with Lita dying at the second one, because I felt like she had a full story in the movie, but now that in the third one, when I see that her death doesn't have such, I mean, it has an impact in the fact that Newt is chose a side, and we see in the third one that he definitely is active against Grindelwald, but he never makes a reference that he's active because of Lita. So it makes Lita's storyline not that useful. And the fact that it took so much time and so much confusion in the second movie, I that makes me like her storyline less, because it doesn't matter in the end.
Yeah, the only mention that we really get of her is with Kama and him being consumed by thoughts of his sister's death or whatever, like, which is so bizarre to me that it's Kama that you choose to care about her, because he didn't have any kind of relationship with her. But okay.
Yeah,
the fact that between Newt, Theseus, Kama, it's Kama that is presented as most affected by her death is, it doesn't work.
Yeah. So the last thing we have on this list, which I'm sure we could keep going with for a very long time if we wanted to, but the last thing on the list for this episode is the swooping evil.
Look, okay. This was my favorite creature, like, introduction of this entire, of, like, anything. I'm sorry. It looks like this creepy moth. It has a skull for a head that, because of my knowledge of animal bones, from my degree, I don't, like, do this in my spare time, guys, I promise, that, like, looks like some, like, feline carnivore-type skull, okay? But then its venom has such a positive thing. Like, this is a creature that eats brains, but you can use the venom to erase bad memories. So it's, like, this positive thing, and we see that used in the movie, and then it just never comes back. And I'm like, I'm sorry. There is a creature that we can erase things from brains, and we're just not going to mention that again. I picture Credence, like, somehow using it and, like, becoming dependent on it to try to forget his time with the bare bones and, like, all of the abuse he had there, or, like, I don't know, trying to, like, maybe Dumbledore uses it to try to make himself forget about Ariana's death and that whole thing, but it doesn't work. I don't know. It feels like such a sad to introduce something of that caliber and to show it used and then to just never mention it again.
Yeah, and I agree that, like, at first when I saw that, I was, I don't know. I don't think the venom would work in on Obscurial, because if it does, why Newt would not use that on a little girl he tried to save before? But now that you say that, it could be a plot point of trying to erase bad memories and failing to do so. And it could be a very good thing, a good message also to say, you can't erase bad memories. Mm-hmm. They are part of you, and you need to deal with that. And you can't choose to erase things from your brain, and even with magic it doesn't work. And so I agree that the swooping evil is very cool. For if we are mentioning creature from the first movie that we miss, I miss Dougal.
Yeah,
I miss the demigods.
Yeah. He was Dougal. So cute. And think of, like, the practical effect he could have had in Secrets of Dumbledore. Like, he could have really moved the plot and done things that were, like, effective, because only he can be invisible. And, like, you know?
Oh, and I realized with the countersight thing against Grindelwald in the last one, in the third one, I don't know if... I don't like to say the last one, because it sounds like the very last one, and I don't mean... But, yeah, okay, the last one. It's... in having a demiguise having this sight of the immediate future, and Grindelwald having this vision of the future, and the thing that they were trying to confuse visions. I'm sure there was a way to use the demigods to do that. I don't know how, but I'm sure.
For sure. Yeah. Missed opportunities. I mean, the biggest missed opportunity is that I have a gorgeous Akami Funko figure and that they never made a swooping evil one because that was the only one I wanted. Every year at like con time with like New York Con and like Emerald City when Funko drops their exclusives, every year I hoped this will be the year I get the swooping evil, and it never was. I was so excited for it. It's just so interesting as like the design of the creature and what it does and how it like everything about that creature. I don't know if my bestie Chimera is listening, but she has heard me preach about the swooping evil and is like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "No, I'm not okay." I'll get off my soapbox now about the swooping evil.
All right. Well, that wraps up our main discussion, which I'm sure could continue on for a very long time. This might go down as one of our longer episodes recently.
If you have unanswered questions from the Fantastic Beasts series, drop us an owl. Any of our social media outlets on Wednesday, right? We'll post the fun graphic asking what unanswered questions you have. Drop your comments. You can always email us them at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate all the reviews. And we love to hear what you have to think about us and the wild rabbit holes we go down.
You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie, on Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie, on Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com, and you can always support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/SpeakBeastie. We have cool monthly stickers that go out and other exclusives that happen on there.
Yeah, I'm sure we will manage to do some content during LeakyCon.
Yes.
I can't wait to see what you guys put up during LeakyCon.
I mean, I'm staying a full week with Anne, so we better find time to do things for the Patreons. And I will see Jeff a lot too, so yeah.
So what I'm hearing is we need like a Patreon exclusive of like Marjo's tour of Chicago. Like,
oh yeah.
Marjo has Chicago deep dish pizza. Like, I need, like, the whole play-by-play.
All the content.
It's an influencer week, and the influence is Marjo in Chicago for LeakyCon.
Oh, wait a second. Marjo, if you're going to Chicago and New York, you could do a video comparing Chicago and New York pizza and which is the best.
Yeah. That would be fun.
Is it a big debate between the
two? Oh, yes. And you could settle this debate.
It's a huge debate.
As an unbiased third party.
And I would say, guys, pizzas in Italy are better, so calm down.
Okay, the pizza I had when I was in Argentina was some of the best pizza of my life, but I haven't been to Europe yet, so.
Oh. All right, well, before we fall down another rabbit hole, we'll wrap this up. I'm Amy.
I'm Marjolaine.
And I'm Liz. Case closed.